The time has come. I'm finally announcing a theater tour. The Golden Retriever of Comedy Tour is kicking off this September. We're hitting 100 cities. It's everywhere. That's right. The greatest nickname the internet has ever given me, the Golden Retriever of Comedy. So why not use it to market the shows I'm doing? LA, Seattle, Portland, Tucson, Denver, Knoxville, Tennessee, Atlanta, Georgia, Louisville, Kentucky, Providence, Rhode Island, Nashville, Tennessee, San Antonio. We're going everywhere with this tour. It's the Golden Retriever of Comedy Tour. Go to dansoder.com for tickets. Get your tickets now, and I'll see you there. Thank you, and just, you know, take care of yourself. Take a little time for yourself. Take a little nap. Maybe smoke a bowl. Maybe have a poop with your pants off to really enjoy it. Pantsless poops make the world a better place. I apologize to you. Yeah. I'm going to open with an apology of the podcast.
Okay.
You were right. You could say this on the podcast.
I can say this.
Everyone needs to know that we go through a...
There's a purge.
There's a purge of stuff that we need to say about people we know to each other. And then we start recording the podcast. Now, I've also learned a lesson from the listeners of I interrupt a lot. So I'm going to try not to interrupt. But what I'm definitely going to start doing at the beginning of the podcast, because this isn't fair to the people listening, is introduce my guest. James McCann, Hey America, is a special. It's out on YouTube right now. When I tell you that James is one of the funniest people I've seen, it's true. He makes me laugh so fucking hard every time.
Please.
Go watch James McCann's special, Hey America.
Dan is the only person, you're the only person I headhunted that I wanted to meet.
Oh, man. That means a lot.
I drove to Houston and I organized a gig just afterwards so that I would have an opportunity to come and say hello.
That was a fun weekend, too.
I had a great time. And I got to meet
Mike Racine.
I was meant to see him while I was here as well, and I'm fucking that up.
Racine, don't worry about it. You won't remember. And if he does, he'll just hold it against you for the rest of his life.
All right, here's the abstract point. I want to make this abstract point.
He'll go like this. He'll go, hey, did you ever hear from James when he was in New York? And I go, yeah, he podcasted with me. He's going to go, what the fuck? You never fucking called me.
I wanted to go on his podcast with the hooker. Oh, yeah. I thought that was a fun left turn his podcast.
We were there that weekend. We were talking to him about the destruction of his old one. And
oh, he'd already, yes. I didn't realize that he was that far ahead with the plans.
That was his idea when we were in Houston. He's like, I think I'm going to get a hooker. And you're like, sure, Mike, sure. But you were saying as a foreigner in the United States.
So a foreigner you'll see a foreigner and someone from a country that I don't know and they'll do something. Like I used to live with Malaysian.
Yeah, Malaysian.
Malaysian. And he like stole my girlfriend's underpants and wouldn't stop smoking inside. But I didn't know enough Malaysians to know if that was just a Malaysian thing or if that guy was bad.
Okay, the smoking thing.
Smoking inside was definitely just a Malaysian thing.
That's a Malaysian thing. Yeah. The underwear seems more like
he
a personal.
He would watch hentai pornography at the kitchen table. It was a very small apartment. This was one of the sadder times in my life.
Hentai. He would just watch full
animated,
on porn.
Animated pornography on the screen.
Just while eating.
I don't remember him eating. I remember him watching. I didn't even get to see it. My girlfriend came out and said, he's watching hentai at the kitchen table.
Would he, when you confronted him, would he?
Never. I never confronted him.
So you just go like, you're watching porn in the kitchen again.
Fuck, there we go. He was enormously fat. Oh. And I remember he used my, I think he wiped his ass with my bath towel.
I hate to tell you this. I don't think he was a roommate. I think he was an enemy. I think you had a full-on enemy.
I don't even hold it against him because that wasn't the strangest thing that happened there. It was a very small two-bedroom apartment.
Sure.
It was the cheapest residential. I didn't have a proper job. I was living on the dole and going to uni and doing comedy. It was the first place I'd moved out, and I didn't. They had terrible fire damage, and they turned a bad two-bedroom into an even smaller three-bedroom apartment by walling off the living room. And so in the extra room, there was an older Italian man showed up and started living there, and there would be screaming at night, and I didn't know what it was. Two people screaming. And then one day I opened the door to the bathroom, and this very old woman was there, and he had secretly moved his, like, 67-year-old mother into the and having her live there in secret so that we
so he
know.
Lived in a walled off living room.
No, the Malaysian lived in the walled off living room. He had a normal bedroom with his mom. Yeah, with
bunk beds, or do you think they slept?
I never took a peep. I saw him carrying in a girl on a motorcycle in a bikini picture.
That's so funny.
So to have that with your mother there. Anyway,
it's
that
like
was a
mama
very strange
likes, mama likes the ladies with the big tits on the motorcycle.
I love the motorcycle under the tits.
Mama likes the big fat tits on the motorcycle. They go jiggly jangly.
It's a power, it's a fecundity. It was I started drinking a lot. That's when I started having port wine by the bed.
Yeah.
And that the relationship wasn't going great, and we would go for long walks, but we would suffer to, anyway.
Port wine by the bed is like bed. That's like Game of Thrones thing.
Yes.
Where like
it did feel sophisticated. Like, I bought myself a goblet.
Did you?
Yeah.
Just to pour a little and go like treasures are abound.
And the second half, I also didn't know how alcoholic it was, so I would have a huge.
Oh, it's port wine.
Knocked out by the end of the night.
There's
reading Russian literature and getting super drunk and living with all these people.
Port wine is served at the end of a meal.
Yes,
because it'll fuck you up.
It's like a winter time. Let's all get very. We're by a fire. That's Let's get warm quickly.
You should have been wearing a fox or like a wolf coat. And then pouring it, listening to Secrets in a Drafty Castle.
I was very bohemian existence.
Yeah, dude.
It was, all right, I want to make this racist point, is that I don't know, sometimes you, like if an Italian man kissed my wife on the lips.
Do you get mad?
You'd have to go, that's an Italian thing.
Yeah.
But if, I don't know, it's anyone else, you'd go, get your lips off of my wife. And so there are people from other countries that I don't know, about.
I don't know black guy. You go, get your goddamn lips
That's
off
who I
my
am.
Wife.
I don't know if you've seen
you
my
go,
coat.
Oh, yeah. My God. I heard James talk in his real voice.
I try and keep you that go, discreet.
Go, say hey, Jack. I go, why do you talk like this?
My first big comedy influence is James Brown, Live at the Apollo Volume 1. Maybe the greatest.
1962?
No, it's in the 50s. Maybe
Live at the Apollo, 1962.
No, it would have to be 62, yeah. Where he does Think.
Yeah, he does I'm obsessed with that album.
Great Night Train to close it out. Yeah, this is 62. Yes.
And that's when the band's intro they go nuts.
I had that playing for the birth of my third child.
Really?
They let us pick a record for the cesarean section.
You did Live at the Apollo. James Brown Live at the Apollo. But I'll tell you, why can't let me tell you
why I love Hot Pants. That section is magnificent. In The Lost Someone, where he starts ripping a little news off about Hot Pants.
Yeah, dude.
And I thought that's what performance has to be, and anything short of that is a terrible mistake. And then my act is nothing like that. But I think about it.
But you're talking about this album.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Live at the Apollo 1962.
Sorry, 62.
Yeah, album that I don't mind is like one of the greatest songs of all time.
Yeah.
You hear James Brown sing and you go like, oh, this guy. Everything they did was practiced and rehearsed.
And the audience interactions where the ladies are going crazy.
Screaming.
And he's begging them to scream. Don't want to hear say, when he say,
I'm
going to turn this off. No one dares disturb me. Sorry, Amos Gill, who's doing a gig with Tony Hinchcliffe for some steel workers.
They're
doing a corporate.
Didn't know you had murderers call you. I didn't know you had, you gave your number to assassins.
I saw his car.
Oh, the eye roast?
No, I didn't see the nicest plate, but I thought that was. It was a green.
My favorite Shane roast.
It was a Lamborghini. Yeah, where he goes, isn't that cool?
That's so cool. Your friends definitely don't laugh about that behind your back.
That's a sign of Shane that he doesn't let out very often. Brother. That's when you're hanging out with him, you get that Shane a lot. But he on stage, you don't go, this man's obviously the best high school bully in the world.
Dude, he had one of my favorite lines of all time. I was doing the Bell House, and he was opening. It was like right when he moved from Philadelphia. And it was Brooklyn. And he went on stage and he opened his set by going, I found you, you nerds. It's me, your bully from high school. I found you. And a very Shane way, he goes, I learned art and I followed you to Brooklyn.
It's lovely.
Because that's who he is.
I'm doing that tonight. And I will say, walking around Brooklyn, I have a sexual power that I don't have anywhere else in the world.
Oh my God, yes.
Weird hair, weird shirt, glasses.
Also, none of this is fake.
No, this is really.
So you got to understand the guys all in Brooklyn that are doing a lot of what you do.
Yes.
It's fake. It's them running away from growing up in like a white collar neighborhood.
Yeah.
So they're like, I'm bohemian now. You wear a fur jacket. You're the type of motherfucker to wear a fur jacket.
Black people love the fur coat. I don't know how many white people will come up to you about a fur coat and say, that is a great coat.
Black people.
Black strangers at the airport.
They go, where'd you get that? Where'd you get that coat?
You let me have that coat. I go, you can't have this coat, brother.
This is what we need for race relations in the United States.
Everybody,
we need an Australian in a fur coat.
Yeah.
Going around getting the attention going.
If I learned one thing from James Brown, it's teeth, hair, fur coat. Gotta go the big three.
You never.
Now, Volume 3, also a great album. I don't know if you heard Volume 3.
No, but I will.
There is a section of
Bewildered. I'm honestly excited to listen to it now because Volume 1 is one of my favorite albums of all time.
Volume 1 is the greatest one, but there is the first half of... There's a section where he introduces the band on Volume 3.
Okay.
And I think Volume 1
he does too.
Nah, he's... I think the drugs have kicked in by Volume 3.
Yes.
And it goes on for a long time. Yes. And it's like...
Because 62, he's young.
You can 62. Hear, you can understand what he's saying in 62.
And 62, his voice, you hear him sing and you go like, oh, this is a young guy.
And the fact that he had to work so hard. In 62, what you had to do to break through in the music business as a black man
in America.
From Georgia, it's almost like being a white guy in the 2010s in Australia, where you have to be so exceptional to break through. Nobody wants to see you shining.
And also, civil rights are not even passed.
Oh, no, you're at...
This is pre-civil rights.
Yeah.
So you're just like, you're James Brown. You're touring. Touring is dangerous for you.
You need a book. You need a special green book.
You need a green book to get around.
But that's how you learn to dance like that.
It's also why your band is airtight. That band is airtight.
Now, then he drops that band, and he gets Bootsy Collins to head up the band in the early 70s.
Okay.
I think. The famous Flames go away.
Yeah.
But I think he keeps the same guy who's bringing him on stage.
Okay,
really. So I get to bring Shane on stage sometimes, and my fantasy is to one day do it like that.
Do it.
Do that introduction. But I would do it like, man, you know this man from Tires. Man who saved retard.
Man who got a secret podcast. Man who loves that Bud Light.
Chinatown impression.
Friends with the Downs. Get on up. Get on up for Shane.
Anyway, he's coming on in two guys. Now, ladies and gentlemen.
For real quick, here's Dire Straits.
Chris Mann, O'Connor. It's so nice to, LeMayr can really get him amped up. When LeMayr gets out there and starts running around the stage and he gets to be a wrestler for a moment, he's got to be like a Paul Heyman type figure.
I love it. Do you remember when we did
Mark Henry's younger brother.
When we did Salt Lake City and I almost fell?
Yes, but I thought you were smooth about it.
Well, what I told Big J and what I told Shane was that if I would have tumbled, I would have tried to do the Willy Wonka. I would have tried to do the roll and the pop back up, like, hey, you know.
But it wouldn't have, you'd have just been writhing on the ground in Salt Lake City.
I'd have been making that noise that the lady crushing grapes, where I go, oh, 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 oh.
I couldn't believe how you moved past it like it was nothing.
I grabbed you because I was like,
I just thought you were emotional. Yeah. That was coming up the stage. Yeah,
Soder really lets his emotions.
And I think that was the one everyone did say hamburger during this set.
If you were at that show and you were wondering why, because people were wondering why online, we made a bet.
Did people ask?
Yeah.
That's great.
They were like, was there a reason? I saw on Twitter someone was like, is there a reason that they all said hamburger? And it was because of hamburger. We were driving to the venue in Colorado Springs and we agreed to all at one point go, hamburger.
Hamburger.
Well, Shane got two in.
Shane got a couple in. He got closed on a hamburger.
He closed
and on. Not one person got even an inquisitive chuckle on hamburger, which is so at the big rooms. I feel the room to play and to like do something that's a little off script. Like they can smell it when you don't know entirely what you're going to say. It becomes terrifying.
Yeah.
Just the word hamburger, you wouldn't think that would be a small enough thing to get a room of 20,000 people to go, silence. What's happening?
Silence. I mean, like I'm talking about handbrake. Like, you did it.
Dead silent.
I did it.
Nothing.
Jay did it. Nothing.
Shane goes twice.
Twice. Shane did it. Shane did it in the Notre Dame story and at the end. Nothing. I mean, nothing. He got something on the first one because of the act out and where he put it.
It could be a hamburger.
It could be a hamburger.
But even like, then, it was less than it would have gotten.
But we got fucking nothing.
It really makes you think hamburger must be incredibly powerful as a comedian to get it to work.
When you see, when you try someone else's song, it's like a cover in a song and you can't get it. You go, I didn't think it was that tough musically.
Landslide, I tried to cover. The chords going on in Landslide are all over. You think it sounds like a nice
then you're
normal,
right here.
It's all over the shop.
So when we were talking about foreigners doing foreign stuff, there's times where you're not sure if someone.
Oh, yes. Can I chalk that up to, I guess, everyone from Portugal is unable to make eye contact or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I don't know enough, but we must. I mean, as an Australian, I'm sure I do things all the time that people look at me here and they go, that's weird. They should be doing that.
I'm pretty sure with like Australians, I got to see a lot of it as a waiter when I worked in Midtown.
Yeah.
Because I was working at a restaurant.
We're here in numbers.
Yeah. But you guys are fun. You guys are very fun. You guys, as far as foreigners, you're the funnest foreigners. You have that.
We're so fucking happy to be here.
You guys are just so happy to be here. Because what happened, I worked at a restaurant in 08 when the dollar collapsed.
Yeah.
So just everyone was over here. The Spanish were the rudest.
Of course.
Easily the rudest.
They held on to fascism for a long time. That doesn't get said enough, but deep into the 70s.
They really did.
Yeah.
And no one knows that doesn't know history. They like held on to a fascist government for a very long time.
You guys like naps, don't you? Like, yeah. Kind of.
You know, are you making us take one?
Sleeping on voting.
But when they came over, you could tell because this waiter that I worked with said it best. Yeah. Their children are all immaculately dressed.
Oh,
the
now
Spaniards see, dress their kids.
The French are always, people go, the French are smelly. The French, like you can spot a Frenchie from 100 yards away. You go, it's like they're wearing something that's being ironed while they're walking.
Yes.
It's sort of, you know.
It's hilarious.
Some Asians have this as well where you go, I don't know how that's come together.
Japanese.
Wow, the Japanese.
They can throw together fits that you're like, how did you come up with that?
Well, this is my theory that I've never managed to get off the ground, but that Asians will dress with great fashion and no style, and black people will often dress with all style and no fashion.
I honestly...
Sometimes. Not all black people. Some, you know, black people are very fashionable, but you can see a black guy wearing like his own hoodie that he's painted on, and he's wearing shorts or something. You go, that's great. No one knows about that yet. Gucci's going to find out about you, and they're going to steal that immediately. And I see Asian people wearing the best, most expensive thing. I go, I would never want to look like that.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. They'll be wearing a silk suit that's perfectly tailored. And you're like, did you just wake up from a nap? Like the way that their suits are?
You're like,
it looks like you're in the fucking Talking Heads concert video.
Wait, are we talking about black people again?
No, we're talking about Asians.
Because I would say I've seen also black people in cool silk suits, entirely wrong proportions.
Oh.
The coolest stuff ever.
Look at any of the old, early 2000 fashion.
Yeah.
Black dudes made giant white tees. Oh. The kind that I used to have to wear when I was a kid and I got chicken pox and had to put that stuff on my body so I didn't itch. What's that called? What's the pink shit that you put on so you don't itch chicken
pox?
I
had it in a bath, I think.
Yeah?
But you're saying you had this on?
But I would just wear a giant t-shirt to bed.
Yeah. So you don't itch.
But then like in the 2000s, rappers. Again. What's that?
I became hip.
Yeah.
They made it work. Also, trousers that don't fit. I love watching those early 2000s when basketball players have suits that are just inhumanly.
It looks so funny.
Someone's going to bring that back. That's a Talking Heads suit.
That's
what I thought you were
saying.
Yeah.
Suit. Where they just like, feel like they're dancing.
Such beautiful outfits.
But you're right. I've seen black dudes, especially in New York City. You know what black dudes make cool?
Okay.
That no one else can make cool? Those ski masks. That just
I remember seeing that a lot during COVID on the basketball.
They're still all over the place.
Ski masks.
But it's like NASCAR drivers wear it under their helmets. They look like idiots.
Yeah.
Black dudes wear it just in the streets. They look cool as shit.
It's time for white people to...
We got to start taking risks.
Well, just culturally, give one thing. I mean, rock and roll ended when? The Strokes? What's the last big proper?
I'd probably say the Black Keys
had a couple of songs late in the
piece. You could argue there's still rock bands, but I would say rock in general, as a guy that worked in alternative radio.
I would say hitting the charts with a rock band.
I would probably say 2008.
2008.
Because I worked... I'll tell you what it was. I used to work at K-Rock here in the city.
K-Rock.
92.3 WXRK. They changed us to a top 40 station in 08. So that was like...
Because it was over.
It was over.
Yeah.
No one gave a shit about rock music anymore. Guys, it's time to talk about the Perfect Jean. Over 30,000 men have rated the Perfect Jean 5 stars because you never have to sacrifice comfort for sweet style. Or also, you know, just wear comfortable pants. We're in 2025. You shouldn't have to, this isn't the old days where you have to find one pair of pants and wear them the rest of your life, even though that would be kind of sick. They come in 3 fits. They got 5 washes, waist sizes 26 to 50 and lengths 26 to 36, giving you over 1,500 combinations to find your perfect pair for client-facing days, playing 18 holes, or grabbing some drinks with the guys at a rooftop bar. For a limited time, our listeners are going to get 15% off their first order, plus free shipping at theperfectjean.nyc, or Google The Perfect Jean and use the code SOTER15 for 15% off. Because The Perfect Jean, I mean, come on. We're giving you a break on it. You're going to love them. They're very, very comfortable. You put them on, you can wear them wherever you want. So it's finally time to stop crushing your balls in uncomfortable jeans by going to the perfect, they said that, not me, by going to theperfectjean.nyc. Our listeners are getting 15% off your first order, plus free shipping, free returns, and free exchanges when you use the code SOTER15 at checkout. That's 15% off for new customers at theperfectjean.nyc with promo code SOTER15. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Go enjoy your sweet, sweet jeans. I actually genuinely, I know we do these reads or whatever, and you're like, oh, what is he like? But dude, as a hypochondriac, when I see ZocDoc, I go, hello, old friend. Because ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high quality in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. I'm telling you, that's the hardest part about getting into a doctor is finding the doctor, finding one close to you, finding an appointment time that works for you. But we're talking about booking in-network appointments with more than 100,000 doctors across every specialty, from mental health to dental health, primary care to urgent care, and more. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance, who are located nearby, and good fit for any medical need you might have. So, I mean, there you go. If you need a doctor and you need to go see one, just get the ZocDoc app, put in all the info, and it'll be easy. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/Soder to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/Soder. ZocDoc.com/Soder.
I remember I used to read, right up until Pitchfork kept it going. I kept reading that until like 2012. Then there was a pivot.
Pitchfork. But before then, Pitchfork review of an album was so important to me back then.
Yeah, I really followed the scores and compare it and try and predict what they were allowed to do. Yeah,
and you're like, and then when they would be wrong.
Oh, it was a great feeling.
You're like, oh, you fucking
I remember
idiots.
They were wrong about Lightspeed Champions first album. They got around him later as Blood Orange, but they really hated that album. But and then at some point I started looking at the end of year top 100 Pitchfork songs. Sure. And I go, these are all bad.
Yeah.
And also A Straight White Man is the top entry at 32. And we're making a lot of this stuff. There's a political bent coming at some point.
Yeah, that was the thing where you started being like, how is he 32?
I don't trust you anymore.
I don't trust you. Yeah.
Well, they redo the top songs of the 90s. And it's like number one, Old Dirty Bastard and Mariah Carey with Fantasy. And you go, while that is a great song, having Smells Like Teen Spirit outside the top five seems like a dig.
Even having had, I would even say having something like fucking Enter Sandman out of the top five is crazy.
Wow. You know what I was listening to on the way over here was the Trust I Seek and I Find in You.
Oh, yeah. Dude, Wherever I May Roam.
It's crossing the road for that. Oh, it's just.
Wherever I May Roam is the greatest travel song of all time.
Well, I was a Freebird. For me is...
Really?
I like that Skinner wrote the greatest travel song and the greatest stay-at-home song. They do Freebird and Sweet Home Alabama. They go, I can't stay here. And they go, I have to stay here. Same band, Cosmopolitanism and Blood and Soil.
They go, I'm free as a bird.
Yeah.
Oh, I would think the best is Turn the Page.
I don't know Turn the Page.
Bob Seger's Turn the Page?
No. I know nothing about Bob Seger. I started watching the Dylan movie in which he... Is that Bob Seger who's like...
I don't know. I didn't watch Complete Unknown.
He does This Land Is Your Land? Is that
No, that's Bob? Pete no. Seger.
Oh, excuse me.
Pete Seger, more of a folk guy. Bob Seger, straight up fucking rock and roll,
I know
brother.
Nothing about Bob Seger.
Oh, my God. I get to show you Night Moves. I get to show you nothing. Fucking... Turn the Page is... Metallica covered it later on Turn the Page. But... Turn the Page is the road song. Like, he wrote it in the 70s. Right. It is like...
Well, I like that because I'm struggling with the road at the moment.
Oh,
it's
brother.
Eating me. I'm staying at my sweet friend Aaron Chen's house. I don't know Chenny. He's the number one ticket mover in Australian festivals. He's so great. He's here in New York now. I can now afford a hotel. And I really didn't want to.
Yeah.
I just wanted... That's why I reached out to you.
Yeah, you're like, can I stay at your house? I was like, brother, I don't think you sleep on this
understand.
Couch.
I understand. But
I
need,
was like, I'll have you get a hotel.
I need
I'm
to
not
be
making
right.
anyone
and
sleep on this fucking
it.
Blue couch.
I appreciate
couch.
It. But I needed to stay with a person. I cannot be in another
Dude,
hotel
I'm telling you right now, I'm going to get you some brain ointment. And that is...
Is that marijuana code?
No, that's Bob Seger's Turn the Page.
It's called brain ointment?
Good music's brain ointment, dude.
I wanted to say this. I got to go to London... Last week.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It was so nice. We had the whole
You did a whole thing, though. You did a whole week. You got an interview?
I did. I stayed there for a long time. Yeah, I got to interview Blondie, The Blondie Way. It's my favorite show.
On YouTube, which I'm going to start watching.
I'm doing nothing but promoting that. But I used to read, like, religiously, I would read, like, Q, Mojo, Uncut, all of their big British NME.
Yeah.
All the, and it was so great. Like, more than I would listen to the music, I would read the journalism on it, and it's dead.
Yeah.
This, the whole generation of autistic men.
Yep.
Who don't get to go to record stores and argue about it. This is a huge loss.
It's a problem. I mean, in the United States, you can probably put it on the same path line as mass shootings. It's because
I believe
guys don't have a place to go like, that album sucked. And they go,
it was a four. It was a four and a half.
Four and a half. This Rolling is Stone, when it got sold by Jan Wenner.
Yeah.
And then it got bought up by a group that's like controlled by like Middle Eastern business.
The Saudis have probably.
It probably is. Oh, and it, like, their journalism used to be great. Rolling Stone used to write like unbelievable articles.
Yeah.
And then now you read it, you're like, this is fucking trash.
That's come to an end, and the Substack thing has not taken over.
Nope, they really thought it was, and you're like, guys, we've already been through blogging.
Yeah.
It didn't catch.
People are trying, and maybe it'll take some time, but boy, I read a great article about it was one of the last people to get into the Vanity Fair sphere of like, you know, I walked in there and Fran Lebowitz is having everyone's having these big drinks and it's all paid for by the account. And then it's, you come back and you write us 4,000 of the best words anyone's ever written about the new hat or whatever. Yeah. But like that whole world of intellectual participation in public life is done.
You know who's going to save it? Tim Dillon.
I mean, genuinely closer than anybody else to
I think
it.
He is the only person with the power to do that.
He's paying attention. People are listening to him. He's very smart. And in terms of the glitzy life,
he lives
I've heard him describe anyone else, I would find it disgusting.
Yes.
But when it's him, I go, that's right. Like he told an actor, he was like, I was in the back of a Rolls Royce.
Yeah, he goes,
and we pulled up and he said, the guy said, do you think we can put regular in this or is it premium? Any car is ever going to be premium. So and I was like, of course, for you, this is great. Anyone else says I bought a Rolls Royce, I go, you scum.
And I've known him since he started coming to the city to do open mics from Long Island. He's always been that way. This isn't a thing where...
It's Tim, authentic expression.
It's so authentic that that's the reason I think he could save it.
Yeah.
Because he's not the same way you... are a hot item in Brooklyn.
I can be, in terms of being a bedraggled Brooklyn hipster and really being able to do that. I'd really rather be the Rolls Royce guy deep down.
Yeah.
I think that seems like a better
I don't think so. I think you're perfect for the Brooklyn fur coat. Women going, like, small girls with mousy bangs just being like, who is he? I don't care.
It is very weird to
just
be looked
spaced out tattoos.
To be looked at by women in a sexually on public transport, to be looked at by women in a sexually provocative way. You know, not since a couple of weeks ago walking around Soho with the homosexuals.
Oh yeah.
Did I get looked at like that? It is
God, I went through a real
moment. To a man's head.
I went through a real moment where early 20s.
Yeah.
I had my little
feeling yourself?
Caesar haircut.
Nice.
Boys were after this. The girls, not so much, but boys.
You knew it was on the table.
Yeah, dude. I just knew. I was like, if I wanted to, I could. It wouldn't be a reach. But I'm telling you, you go to Brooklyn right now, shit, you'd be the heartthrob of Greenpoint.
I am glad I got my life sorted and settled and into because
family?
I really think I could have gotten AIDS out there from a woman. And that's not easy to do as a man.
I would say.
But I would have been putting numbers on the.
A white man? Very difficult. I would say. We tossed James into, like, shit, 2011 Williamsburg. You're a problem. You are a problem, especially because I'm drinking. And
I'll add the extra thing is that anywhere else in America buys you nothing.
Really?
Oh.
You haven't been to a place. So this was
secondhand bookstores.
Oh,
you know, there are certain locations, but just walking down the main street.
It's always funny where you see
worst looking man in my hometown and where I live now,
you
know, Brooklyn.
Men are like drinks, where sometimes a drink is perfectly put in a situation.
Sure.
Where you go, I don't enjoy that drink, but then you're in a situation. Like,
I'm trying to think of a drink that I like to have in a certain situation.
But like gin and tonics, I never enjoyed unless I was at like a pretty nice event. Yes. And then I would have a gin and tonic and I'd go, this is great.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I
reckon if you were in India, scared of malaria, it's hot outside.
Oh, you can't trust the water?
No.
What do you need?
I have one of them.
That's like beer in the old
West. Give me the quinine.
Where you're like, give me a beer.
Give me a beer. I'm trying to. There are certain beers that on a hot day I can have.
Oh,
there's a
yeah.
VB is an Australian beer.
Okay.
On a hot day, wow. It's
just a good VB.
The rest of the time, it's no good, but you've a hard earned. Their commercial is the most iconic, best Australian commercial. They took. very close to the theme song from The Magnificent Seven.
Okay.
Ba-da-da-da-do-do-do-do-do. Yeah. And they just have like men working. And then they have a guy doing like a bush poem over the top of it.
Yes. Going,
you can get it plowing a field. You can get it. And then it's like little wine.
So that's couples. Our equivalent in the States is the Coors Banquet commercial with Sam Elliott.
I'm interested in.
Where it shows just like a bunch of, I'm from Colorado. Yeah. So it shows like. If you're up in the Rocky Mountains and you're looking for something to drink, well, there's Coors Banquet beer. Since the Rockies have some of the coldest water ever. And you watch and you go, I want a Coors Banquet
beer. Yeah.
I bought an 18-pack of Coors Banquet beer because of a Sam Elliott commercial.
Is this the one in the little gold bottle?
It's the gold can. That's Coors Original.
That was one of the first beers that I had and liked in America. When I first moved here and I was in Steubenville, Ohio,
yeah.
And it was snowing and I had nothing. I had no job. I had no money. I didn't have enough money to get home.
And explain
this
to me,
about 14 months ago.
Why Steubenville? Why Steubenville?
I got a job and then I got fired from the job.
How fast did you get fired?
I got fired before I arrived. But as a part of being fired, I still got a small, you know, I got some money and 3 months rent. And about enough money to live for the 3 months. Not quite enough. But it was okay.
So they hire you to move from Australia.
Yes.
To a different hemisphere.
Yes.
And then they fire you.
Well, they looked up my stand-up comedy and they were right to fire. They were like, this is.
So that's what got you fired?
Yeah.
Was your comedy?
They said, this is disgusting. I know. And I had just released a sketch about stabbing someone in the throat with an AIDS needle. And I think it was a good upstanding Catholic podcast. And I understood. I got it. Like, I actually don't. But
so
I
you weren't mad.
I wish the timing had been different. But they helped me get a place in America. I still got I got a visa that wasn't contingent. It's not easy to get a visa to come here.
Are you worried about that at all now with the shit that's going on?
I think I would like to get a green card before the next administration.
Yeah.
Because I think as a person currently living in Austin and moving in those circles, if the Dems do take back power, that might be more challenging
for me. It's so funny to see which foreigners worry about which administration.
Yeah.
Anyone Latin right now is sweating bullets.
Oh, man.
Any white foreigners are like, well, this next president might fucking really jack us up.
It's going to zig the other way.
Yeah. You know? That's what's happening in America right now is you're just seeing like call and response happen so fast.
Yeah.
That used to take like a decade. Now takes 2 years.
It's a big but I think, I mean, it's hard to know what the Dems are going to do. Last time they had a
playbook. Well, they're
they
down.
Knew what they were doing. We're resistance.
They're down bad.
They're having a bit of an existential crisis.
Yeah, because you're finally seeing, and I hate politics. I hate all politics. But what we're finally seeing also in society is you're starting to see that the boomers are getting too old.
Yeah.
That they're now all falling. They're all Biden and then.
Yeah.
You know, they're all like...
And the Gen X has never had to figure out what they stood for because they never really had... you would be a Gen Xer.
I'd be an older millennial.
The older millennial?
Yeah, I'm 83.
Wow. I'm a very young... I'm 81. No, 91. I'm 91. Yeah. So I'm a young millennial.
You're a young millennial, but I'm like the... I'm right at the start of millennials.
Yeah, so then for Smells Like Teen Spirit, you're 10. So you're
I was 11 years old. Yeah, 94. Yeah. And it was fucking life-changing.
I
Nirvana was fucking life.
I remember watching. I was in a Burger
Metallica
King.
Metallica and Nirvana.
I was in Hungry Jack's, and they, you know, that you see the music videos. You don't usually see the cheap music videos to get on the music video 24/7 cable thing.
Yeah,
and it was a Cherry Pie.
Yeah,
she's my Cherry Pie, and they showed the year. And I don't remember the year, but it was like contemporaneous.
Look when Cherry Pie is. She's my Cherry Pie.
And they've got like bandanas and the long hair and makeup and the
it ended there. Quick. Yeah,
and it's like. Oh, that's the world that Smells Like Teen Spirit put a knife in.
Yes.
And killed forever.
So it's very...
August 90.
So it's 90. So less than 3 years later.
Yeah.
And by the way, Nirvana put out Bleach in like fucking 90.
91?
91, 92.
And
that has About a Girl. That has like some great songs on it. But...
Also, the Pixies are before then.
Pixies are before.
Pixies are late 80s.
But... 89.
Wow.
When was Bleach out, though? The album Bleach. I want to say it might have been... Oh, wow, 89.
So it was something was brewing, and Smells Like Teen Spirit was funny. The cultural
It's Big J, who we both, you know.
Yes, yeah.
I just
saw him with long hair. I'd never seen that before.
Oh, it's so cool.
And he made sense to me as a man with long hair in a way that I went, oh, I know who you are now.
Can I tell you right now, and Bonfire fans know this?
Yeah.
I've been lobbying.
For the return
lobbying
of the hair?
Lobbying for 10 years for him to grow his hair back out.
Go back to the
hair. Because that was when we became friends. He had the long hair, biker, looked cool.
Yes.
Everything made sense.
It was because I've met him a couple times with the short hair, and I thought, I like that you're here. The comedy's great. You're a wonderful guy.
Yeah.
I don't have a full purchase on who you are. When I saw the long hair, I thought, oh, I know you.
Yeah. So
it was welcoming.
So you know? He's like a music savant. Like he can tell you every album, every song, every lyric from fucking 1950 on. It's fucking insane the music recall that Big J has. But when we were doing the radio show together, he would always be like, Warrant. Or like Bon Jovi, and I don't care.
Yeah.
Because I was a little kid while all that music was going on. I didn't care about like Poison. I didn't give a shit about
Whitesnake.
I didn't give a fuck. Would watch MTV and go like, okay, this is what adults, but like for me it was Guns N' Roses, Metallica, then Nirvana and the grunge scene.
And then
I just held on to Soundgarden.
Late 90s. There's a dip, and so you must have been. I'm trying to think of
late 90s for me is
but like your early 20s, you get that White Stripes, Strokes,
Brother.
Rock and Roll, Detroit. Did you ever listen to Electric Six?
No,
They had the Gay Bar, they had Danger High Voltage, but they were also in Detroit. They were the other band from Detroit. Okay. White Stripes really took off,
White Stripes took off. Well, that's what was funny is Queens of the Stone Age came into my life, with Songs for the Deaf in 2002. And I was just kind of like, oh, well, this is my favorite band now. And then I also found out they had three albums before, and I could get into Caius, and I could get into
Caius.
Dude, I'll get you.
All right.
I'm getting you Welcome to Sky Valley. I'm going to get you Blues for the Red Sun. I'm
trying to get the years here. So this is like
97 was Caius.
Yeah.
98 was the first Queens of the Stone Age split album.
Yes.
And then they did self-titled was 98, and then Rated R in 99 or 2000. Then they did...
And Oasis is done by like 96.
Yeah, but were they though? Because they were still like everywhere.
Hang on,
Are you excited about their shows?
I have friends who are proper Oasis people. Some of the songs. Yeah, I don't go. What I love is the interviews.
Me too.
I've watched all the interviews.
Who's your guy, Liam or Noah?
No. I mean,
Noel's the fun.
Be friends with Noel. Liam seems like a liability. Noel, if he got in a fight, you'd go, as probably a justified thing had happened. Liam is.
What, Oasis?
They dragged on for a while, but they weren't having like big hits.
They weren't doing well. Wait, who was the one that you guys met in...
Noel. Noel is like the sensible one.
No, I like Liam.
You like the wild man.
Yeah, because his interviews are so funny.
No, yes.
He goes, there's one where he's like showing the tee setup, and he's like, this is how big in the 90s we were, right?
Yeah.
I had a guy...
The tee setup?
Yeah.
Like, for tee?
Yeah, I'm going to show you the video. I think I have it saved.
Okay.
Where he's like, I'm going to show you how big we were. He's like, back in the 90s, I had a cunt for my tea. He like goes through and he goes, I had a little cunt for my tea. I had a little, I think I still have it figured out.
As a historic figure, Liam, very interesting. If I was on a plane next to someone for 6 hours, I'd take Noel every single time.
Yeah.
You'd actually be able to talk to him. He seems like a brilliant intellect.
He's very smart.
Also, he's got the...
I also love this where there's kids are asking Liam questions. This little kid's going like, what's your favorite? He goes, Find Nemo. What's yours? It's just, I love Liam. Liam.
I was along for when the Russell Brand, Noel, BBC stuff. I really
But Liam, enjoyed. I think, is my guy. I think if I'm picking one.
I hope they can work it out. I hope they can get these shows together.
I mean, I feel like the amount of, you're right, money can't fucking solve them. Where is this video?
ABBA put it off for years. ABBA were offered like $1 billion to get back together, and
that's too much
took like
money.
10-15 years.
Where the fuck? Oh, here it is.
It was a lot.
Nish. How great is he?
He's so charismatic.
I'm sending you the clip so you can edit it in. I'm sending it in.
Have you heard? There's a record that my dad had, which was them arguing. It was like
he's like,
oh, like a journalist just recorded the two of them interviewing them.
I kind of remember that.
It goes for like half an hour, and I think Liam has gotten in a fist fight on a ferry. Back from like Amsterdam or something.
Dude.
And it's him defending
Why?
Just taking wild swings at a guy. And I was like, I can't fucking take you anywhere.
Yeah, dude. If you're Noel, you are... It's 100% Noel being frustrated with Liam.
Yes.
And they share a similar personality. So then he's got...
He can usher him through the business.
But he's also probably got a moment where he goes, stop! Just stop!
I think at some point they did. I mean, they didn't talk for over a decade.
And then Liam's like... Fuck you. He's just my favorite. Just the way that Liam Gallagher is like, shut the fuck up. I think, was it Liam that just got interviewed by Jim Jefferies?
Oh, I don't know.
That was great.
I'll ask, because my friend Amos, he opens for Jim, but he's the Oasis.
Jim's the man.
I've never known Jim. I've hung out with him one time.
Oh, I'll bridge that gap. I
have so many ins with him, but we had one conversation where I was speaking about Catholic social teaching.
Yeah.
Because he was asking about it.
Sure.
And I was like, no condoms at all. And it's like, no. You just keep going until your wife has a terrible pregnancy. Yeah. And she's, you know... And I thought, I'm not representing myself well.
That's so
funny. It's my strong memory. But I know he was, I always thought it would be cool in that he's such an everyman and that he was an opera singer. He was a trained opera singer until he got, yes, I know, right? That's the look everyone should give. Jim Jefferies was training to be an opera singer. He got like a problem with his voice and he did comedy instead afterwards.
That's crazy.
But if anyone is going to do the show, you know, like an 8-part series on opera, Jim Jefferies presents the world of opera.
Who wouldn't
watch this show?
I would watch his takes on opera.
Yeah.
Coming from the world.
Pagliacci's a sad cunt, but he's a clown. It's funny like that sometimes. I think that would be a good...
Dude, I'll tell you right now, man, I got to do a couple shows. Me and Norman did a couple shows with Jim Jefferies.
Yeah.
And watching how good he is at stand-up, you like go to other people and like, he's so fucking good.
Yeah.
He's just so natural. Yes. Like...
He has bait and switch baked deep into his...
Yeah.
Just in the chat. It's on and it's moves. It's everywhere.
Him, the only person I've ever seen like that's Bill Burr and Shane, where they're just like, the way they talk is like they're talking to you and then they just go out in front of thousands of people and they talk in the same exact way. Every other person I know, there's even myself included, there's a shift and you work on it. Chappelle just like goes is like... But Chappelle's in his own world.
Yes.
Like Chappelle will just, I don't think Chappelle ever knows now when he's on stage. I think
you can talk for 4 hours. Yeah.
I don't think Chappelle.
I think as you round the corner into the third hour, you probably can't keep the clown going.
I think
going.
Chappelle has moments where he's like, and that's why this election, where am I? And he's just at an empty bus station and he's like, how the hell did I talk my way into this? But if you're like, or when he runs out of cigarettes, that's when he snaps out and he's like, what happened? What year is it? They go, it's 2025. What happened to Neil? Where is Neil?
I'm trying to think who else does it. Because Bill Burr, I'm interested that you say that.
Well, Bill Burr.
Because I've never met Bill Burr.
That's why he's a tough
I'm
hang.
A huge Bill Burr fan. Yeah, but it seems like shrouded in he's anger. Him. And then I hear him on the podcast. And he like, the way he talks about his life on the podcast, he's so charming and he's so open and vulnerable.
Yeah.
And then he's going like, I have to get on top of it. And he's being charming about, I just hate everybody. And I'm angry. And it's like, well, if I met you, I think I meet the angry guy.
Well, you...
And I'm scared to do that because I loved F is for Family.
Yeah.
I think I'm an entrenched Bill Burr. I couldn't believe when I saw the black and white special. I had really thought comedy was kind of done at that
The helicopter point. Act out in that is one of the greatest act outs in any stand-up bit of all time.
And
when the guy
technically,
when he jumps and he goes,
I was describing that to Aaron Chen earlier today. Yeah. It is like technically masterful.
It's perfect. And I've been a guy, I'm a Burrophile. I'm a big Burrophile. Nice. And, you know, there's a reason that saying never meet your heroes. Because when you're around Bill Burr.
Yeah.
It's like being around a dog that's growling all the time.
Sure.
Where you go like, I don't know if this is for me, but I don't want to get bit.
No.
Because sometimes he'll be like, I did the Patrice benefit, and he'd be like, I'll just say something. And he'd be like, yeah, why is that? And then you're like, oh God, he's attacking me.
No, I never want that. No. He shouted out one of my bits on the podcast. Oh, wow. He saw like a reel and it was on the, I don't know. I've never felt more warm and fuzzy.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
I was, but then of course, if I went up to him and said, you saw one of my bits and you said it on the thing, he'd be like, I know. It would buy me butter, no parsnips.
So that's what Patrice was like.
Yeah.
Patrice, you would have these moments where you would be like, I think I'm in with him. And then you walk up and you're like, hey, Patrice. And he's like, get the fuck out of my face. And you're like, that was my mistake. And you like walk away and you go,
I heard a story about him from an Irish guy this week on the phone. A friend of mine, Eddie Bannon, used to run a comedy festival in Ireland and they got Patrice over there. And I'd forgotten that Patrice seems to have broken in the UK before America.
He had to come back.
Yeah.
He was going to be huge in London. Like he was on his way.
But like had run into walls in America.
No, he went over there being like, from what I'm told from like Big J, who was close with him and people that were close with him.
I don't know. This is
Bobby Kelly.
Yeah.
That he was kind of like, fuck this shit. And then he went to London and everyone in England was like, oh, you're one of the greatest of all time. Like very similar to a Hendrix.
Yeah.
Where they were kind of like, oh, fuck, you're great. And then he had to like make the choice to come back here. I know. That would have been great.
I mean, both were great. We got a lot of the work.
Yeah, but I think we wouldn't have gotten the years where he didn't give a shit here, where he was dismayed by the business here.
Yeah.
The business here was so controlled by the industry that it turned him off. It just, a guy it's like funny, that.
Because now America, I think, is the least controlled by the industry of any of these places.
I agree.
You still in Australia and the UK and New Zealand have to go up through some lady from the BBC putting you on.
Yeah, no, a now here it's like those people, you're watching them scramble. And I'm not going to lie.
You're nice. Enjoying it. You're loving it.
Kind of nice to watch people go, we watched and we don't get it. And now they go like, are you hiring an extra producer on your podcast? And you're like, no, I'm not. I just don't see a place where we can have a
what do managers do? What do they do? They've got to come up with an excuse. Oh, this is the story. So the Irish guy brings him in. He's emceeing the thing. And they're having a wonderful chat. It's warm and it's nice and positive. And then apparently Patrice got very serious and said, you need to bring me on and say the N-word. I need you to bring me on and say, please welcome to the stage the N-word. And he said the N-word at the time. And the guy was like, I don't want to.
Yeah.
He was like, you will do it. You're going to do it. You're going to go out there and do it for me.
You know how fucking terrifying that is?
He said he was very frightened and he didn't do it and he didn't know if he did the right thing. And if he had done it, would that have been worse?
Yeah, but you should be like, man, what the fuck?
I expect that would have.
I'd like to bring up that boop. And then he's like, what the fuck? That's got
to
be
I mean, you would have, I never got to meet Patrice, but you would have won some sort of point for having the Stones to have done it.
Yeah, I think
having been told to do it.
I mean, dude, I don't know, man.
It's very hard to know.
That's just got to be a tough thing, especially when you go, I mean, ideally you come over here, right? You're here.
I come over here.
Yeah, you're already here.
Yeah.
If you blow up in the way that we're talking about Patrice blowing up in England.
Yes.
Would you want to go back to Australia or would you be comfortable being like, because America, you know, we were the pinnacle for, I mean, I think we still are as far as like getting eyeballs on stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
but also at the creative pinnacle simultaneously. I mean,
yeah, the First Amendment's pretty big.
The greats are all here. Yeah.
But, yeah. You can say whatever you want. You can't get in trouble.
But that it's not like there's just a piece of paper guaranteeing that people actually. All right. I was in the UK and over again, I would be talking to someone and the vibe I got was that they were sort of waiting for me to say something they disagreed with so they could dismiss me and go, I don't have to worry about this person. Thank goodness they don't have a purchase on my life anymore. In America, people are so open. And then you say something just typically when I disagree with someone or they disagree and people are enthusiastic about having a disagreement
because
you'll really be able to open that up now and get to know one another and work through it. They don't. That's not in the colonies.
I read a very interesting article a couple of years ago about it was called the immigrant gene, and that people that
talk about this all the time. I didn't know there was a book about it, but like the Dutch leave for South Africa, and then a certain kind of person in that country is out, and so who remains is going to be different.
Yeah.
Like by having an immigrant population, both countries change.
So basically,
do you know what I mean?
But well, the point.
Maybe it's a different thing that you're saying.
This was a genealogy thing.
Okay.
Where they were basically saying, like, everyone that came over through Ellis Island, through immigration, even illegal immigration, the people that come over there have something in them that goes, like, I need to go somewhere else to fulfill what I need.
Yes.
And that gene passes down.
Yeah.
So that people three generations later, even if you're born in a fucking town in Ohio,
you still have the need to move.
You have that need to, like, we've got to do something.
Which,
so basically, America is this country of immigrant genes moving around, which gives us the ability. We want to clash. We want to stake.
But also, that you, on a structural level, you have moving within America built in.
Yeah.
Everybody starts somewhere, goes to college in a second place, and seems to live in place number three.
Yep. You know what's the most offended people got whenever I talk about this podcast? That the reason I left Colorado, because I was afraid I was going to get stuck in Colorado. And then people send me messages where they go, fuck you, I'm stuck in Colorado. What's wrong with my life? And I go, nothing.
No.
I'm just saying why I left.
But also, I mean, there are many people who are like New Yorkers who then go to college in, I don't know, West Virginia, I'm picking up, but then would end up in Colorado and go, I made it to Colorado.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly. It's that was like what we were talking about.
Adam seems to be not ending where you started. Yeah. It doesn't really matter where that ends
up. Because it's empirical evidence that you made a move, that you that you evolved, that you changed. So it's like big for people. I mean, for me, born in Hartford, Connecticut, raised in Colorado, went to college in Arizona, worked in Alaska, back in Arizona doing comedy, then moved here.
I know you worked in Alaska.
Just for a summer.
How was it? Were you on the oil fields or something?
No, I did a fish cannery.
Fish canary?
Cannery.
Okay.
A cannery. So
you put fish in cans?
Yeah. I just caught them in a can and I said, you live here now. No, I did a dock crew. So I worked at a commercial fishery where all these people would go out and they'd do, I worked for salmon. I did halibut and salmon season. So they go out into the river, the Kenai River or the Cook Inlet. And then it was the Kenai River mostly. The Cook Inlet was for the halibut. But you would do just for the halibut. But you would.
I was there. Wait, had you gone to college by this? You'd gone
I was
to
in
college.
Between years. Okay. At
so you go there at some time
at uni.
Excuse me. Yeah, we do
college. In between my freshman and sophomore year.
Did you start comedy at college, or you did?
Yeah, I started it actually when I came back from Alaska. Because that was the moment where I was like, oh, I think I'm funny enough to do this.
You were hanging out with the boys at the cannery.
I was killing.
Yeah.
I mean, I was fucking killing.
It is a nice feeling.
I mean, these boys were hardened, working men. And my soft-handed little bitch ass was getting them laughing.
Yeah.
And I lived with my aunt, who was my dad's sister up there.
Okay.
She had cancer. And she was dying of liver cancer. So I was like, oh, I'm going to go up there and live with you. She was my funniest family member. And I just went and lived with her. But then I worked at the docks, so I had to live on the docks. So I would come back and see her.
Living on the waterfront.
Yeah. I lived, shout out Steve Calderwood. He just DM'd me. I haven't spoken to him in fucking 25 years. But they would let you rent a room on premise of the docks. Like there's like places you could live.
And this is what, there are mountains there? And
Denali.
Okay.
There's Mount McKinley. Or Denali.
As it is now.
As it is now. It was Mount McKinley when I lived there, then they switched to Denali, and they switched it back to Mount McKinley. I would drive. There'd be moments where I'd like go to the store to get cigarettes and beer, and then I would turn a corner, and the sweeping view, I would be like...
It's all breathtaking.
It's unbelievable. In the summer...
Did you drive up there? Or?
No, I flew up there.
You flew up there.
I flew to Seattle, then Seattle to Anchorage, and then took a puddle jumper from Anchorage to Kenai. I lived in Kenai and Soldotna. And...
So these are islands or they're on the mainland?
It's 2.5 hours southeast of Anchorage.
Okay.
So it's by the way, the drive from Anchorage.
Where's this compared to Ketchikan?
Ketchikan was right up the river. So we were pretty close.
I fell into a Wikipedia thing about Ketchikan. Alaskan geography for the time.
It's unbelievable.
And reading about the native community bus services and things.
They also pay you to live there because there's an oil reserve. So when you move there and you become an Alaskan citizen, they give you a check. Or they used to. They send you a check for like $1,700.
And they have a comedy festival there. I know that.
Yeah, I'd love to do it. I'd love to go up there and do stand-up because I never got to do stand-up in Alaska. But I worked and...
Your time will come.
I would definitely go up there.
Yeah.
I would love to go up there. But it was probably one of the greatest summers of my life because, A, my aunt was dying. I really liked her. She's very funny. I asked her if I should do stand-up.
Rewording that.
What?
It was one of the greatest summers of my life because my aunt was dying and I loved her.
That bitch was getting out of here.
You got to be close with her at a difficult time.
She was like one of the only family members from my dad's side that I really knew.
Yeah.
So I liked... she's very funny too. She's very fucking funny. And so it was fun to hang out with her, but then I ended up just working because I didn't realize, I didn't like go up there knowing I was going to do that. I went up there being like, oh, I'll live with her. I'll work at like a restaurant or something. And I tried getting hired at a landscaping place. They weren't hiring. I tried getting hired at a radio station. They weren't hiring. And then I took my aunt's truck to the docks. This guy, Brian, who was working on the Cheyenne, shout out his ship, the Cheyenne. He was welding.
Okay.
The guy was welding the side of his ship. And I just walked up to him like a fucking idiot. And I went, excuse me, interrupting a man welding is makes you feel real gay. And he like threw up his mask and he was like, what's up? And I was like, are they hiring here? And he's like, hold on. And he like went up to the owner's house, like the guy that owned it. And he's like, you guys hiring? And then I went up to the guy's.
This is a Fox Searchlight movie.
It was crazy. I went up there and the guy was like, fish season doesn't start for like a month or two or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
He's like, are you good with your hands? You are with like manual labor? And I was like, yeah. And he tossed me a pair of work gloves. And he's like brand new work gloves. He had a drawer like filled with work gloves. And he like tossed me a pair and he's like, 8 a.m. Monday, because it was a Friday that I asked.
Yeah.
He's like, 8 a.m. Monday. You all right with that? And I was like, yeah. He's like, all right, here's the paperwork. Bring it back filled out. 8 a.m. Monday. And I showed up 8 a.m. and it was me, two other guys, and they handed us a pickaxe and a shovel. And they're like, there's a PVC pipe about 6 feet in the ground, runs 90 yards all the way to the water. We need you to dig it up because in the freeze in the winter, it cracked. So we need to replace it. So our job for the week was just digging
the pipe up.
And that was it. But it was sick because honestly, that was back when I was drinking and smoking. So
yeah.
I would do like, you know.
You get tired during the day and then you have to hang out with the boys at night.
Drink 6 beers and then smoke like, and this was when weed was hard to get because it was still a class 1 narcotic. And Alaska has some of the best weed I've ever smoked in my life.
I didn't know that about them.
So these guys would like pack a bowl and I'd like take a hit and I'd be like, drink a couple High Lifes, fucking go back to my aunt's house.
And you also knew you were going back to college at this point.
In August, I knew I was like going to go back.
That makes it very sweet because if you had done college and then done that and not had anything afterwards,
scary.
The fear would
Well, really the whole thing was like, I was like, I don't know what you guys do in between years at college in Australia.
Gap year, people.
Yeah.
Well, between school and college, high university, people go out and they, you know, you go on a tiki tour of Europe and get very drunk. So
a lot of times I just jumped right into university. I went from high school to university.
Yeah.
And then
that's what I did.
Yeah. But then in between semesters, freshman, sophomore, I was going to go back to Colorado and just like wait tables at Applebee's.
But you guys do a huge, we have more small gaps. Okay. The small gaps through the year are longer. I'm starting to understand what summer holidays mean to Americans.
Yeah, it's
you get the summer. It's like 2 full months. Three? What? How long is
brother,
it?
Brother, I was out May. I was done with classes May 10th.
Yeah.
And I didn't need to be back at school till August 28th.
That's an incredible stretch of time.
I lived in Alaska that whole time.
Yeah.
And I came back with like $15,000.
This also makes sense to me of having like the summer blockbuster or the hit of the summer.
Yeah.
People are just in a fallow season of rest.
Well, they want to go to the movies. They want to listen to stuff. They're going to beach. They're going to party or whatever. And I was just making money. So when I came back to school, I fucking came back with, you know, 20 pounds of muscle and $15,000.
And a grizzled working man's experience. Oh my
God. Hands that are calloused.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, it was. But
then you have to sit in classes again after that.
Yeah. And then also the muscle wasted away. The money fucking ran out. And I just was like.
And that having a weird job for a stretch is huge.
Also, you know what it did?
It taught me
what I never want to do, which is that kind of work.
Yeah.
It was so hard. 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. They wouldn't give us days off unless it was a holiday because they didn't want to pay us time and a half.
Yeah.
So you just work. You literally just wake up to work. But hour for lunch, hour for dinner, you eat fast and then you smoke weed for 45 minutes with all your friends.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of sick because you're just driving around forklifts.
Well, I mean, also you can enjoy things at the end of it long. I never got to do manual labor because I'm so bad with my...
I mean, I was bad too. To the point that when I left in August...
You're a personality hire.
Yes. Yeah. The foreman told me, he goes, we wanted to fire you so many times. He goes, but you're a hard worker. That's exactly what he said to me. Where I was like, oh, you just called me a bitch. Because they would be like...
He said he liked you.
Yeah, but they would be like, hey, change out the timing belt on this thing. And I'd be like, I don't know how to fucking do that. And then you have to go get like Steve or Mike, like the doc boss, to be like, hey, Mike, will you do this? It was nuts. I did, yeah. But
you knew at that point, I will never do that again.
So hard that I was like, all right.
Well, then how do you get into radio What's the jump? What's the time delay for you to?
So I go
finish college, and you go, I've got to do something with my voice or my brain.
Well, I started when I moved back to Tucson after Alaska. I spent all the money.
Yeah,
I mean, fast.
You buy cool shoes?
Yeah,
yeah.
I bought a lot of alcohol.
I spent $70 on socks this afternoon.
Dude, I went to Costco and bought giant 175s of Jack Daniel's whiskey, like four of them, and like three cartons. I was shopping like I won the lotto.
Yeah.
And then I ran out of money. And perfectly, I had to get a job, so I got hired at Outback Steakhouse as a...
There's so many complaints about Outback Steakhouse.
Bring it. I only did two shifts.
They don't, I mean...
I'll get into it.
I worked at McDonald's very briefly. I worked at a cafe. I was at a Subway for like 3 weeks, and they said, you'd never come back. I was so
Why?
Bad. I was just bad. I was slow.
Yeah.
I was not a good... I don't know. I just could not...
Yeah.
Go into that mode.
How hard is it cutting? Was this when you used to cut the middle of the bread? Were you there?
Little knife. You got
That little green or yellow knife.
Tiny, and then a little magnetic strip. Yeah, I was just so bad at it. And also, I rubbed the boss up the wrong way. I was not able to go along and get along.
Yeah, you couldn't do the corporate thing of like, hey, we win, Subway wins.
All the meetings, all the, you have to, you know, we're all watching a thing about not harassing each other. And every job I've had, except for comedy, I've been an unmitigated failure.
Yeah.
Actually, as a copywriter, I could really do. I discovered...
You were a copywriter?
I was like the lowest rung of copywriter. And I was sort of working my way up. I was doing okay. But when we got... I got married. My wife got pregnant. And I had no... I had been a music journalist for a while. And okay. I loved that. But then
How much you loved Pitchfork and that stuff.
Loved them, and then I got to do it, and then they just stopped kind of existing.
That's how I was.
I was there right at the end when they shut down. I was in New Zealand on holiday, and I got a phone call going, there's no magazine for you to come back to.
You know what's crazy about that? Is you and I were both working in rock music when it died.
Yeah.
You were working as a rock journalist.
Yes.
And I was on a rock station as a DJ.
It was a very...
And it got killed. We watched it die.
And then I hung around a little too long, because I worked in commercial radio, and the extent to which... I think radio had been able to make choices about what was playing.
Yeah.
And then it was entirely on the receiving end of, this is popular, this is getting a lot of streams, we're playing that.
Yeah. It doesn't matter if it's good or not, it's popular.
Well, you know, no one there left has even a sense of, you know.
Yeah. So you're...
Good is not the question anymore.
But Outback Steakhouse...
Yeah, they don't serve our beers. They serve Foster's, which we don't drink.
Yeah, Foster's has never even been kind of an Australian beer.
I think we had it until like Crocodile Dundee, and then we were a bit embarrassed by it, and we stopped having it. And we have Crown Lager instead is the like...
What is the... If you were to say like... I would say Budweiser's... Budweiser's America's beer.
Yeah.
Budweiser's or Coors.
I would say it's very regional. Carlton Draft would be one. VB.
What did you grow up drinking?
Cooper's Pale. That's the largest family-owned brewery in Australia. They have it for sale. I'm told that the old mate... There's a new Aussie bar that's just opened up in
Manhattan. Have Shane buy it.
The Aussie bar? Or
Cooper's? Buy Cooper's Ale.
No, we got it. It's got a stand. It's been in the Cooper's family.
That's fair.
It's been in the Cooper's family for a long time, but I love that beer. Beer doesn't travel well.
No.
You have to make it under license, but I loved it.
So Outback doesn't serve. So you're telling me you guys don't have an awesome blossom.
What I found funny was the Alice Springs chicken. You can buy Alice Springs chicken. And they've clearly just selected that because Alice Springs is in the middle.
Okay.
And there's nothing around it. So when you're on Google Maps or whatever, or they draw a map, it's nice to put something there. So they put Alice Springs. It's like 30,000 people. It's not a big town.
But the chicken.
Well, that's just every bad story in Australia.
Alice Springs.
The violence and the crime. Like whenever a curfew is put on, it's Alice Springs.
So that...
Whenever there's, you know, people have been... When Spanion, who's a... Great Aussie export. He's a ex-con kickboxer who just walks around bad neighborhoods. You know, walking around Kensington going, there's a guy doing heroin on the street. Kids can watch him. And so he goes to Alice Springs and like sees what's going on there. That's how rough Alice Springs is.
So if we had an American
Alice Springs
restaurant.
Chicken.
Yeah. If we had an American restaurant in Australia that we didn't fuck with and it was called like... I'm trying to think of what's like a rural ass fucked up town. Like, well, we do Omaha beef, but that's because Nebraska does beef.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think
of
Gary, Indiana chicken.
This is how weird it becomes, is that we've got,
did you try that Gary, Indiana chicken over at Patriots? And you go, the fuck is that?
We used to have, we have Outback Steakhouse in Australia.
No, you don't.
So like within Australia, you can go to an American restaurant pretending to be an Australian restaurant.
Who decided to bring it over there? Isn't that like
no, I've never been. I'd never been
the
in
guy
Australia.
In the guy Hog's in the boardroom that's like one. Outback in the Outback, and they go, that doesn't work.
It would be, I don't know. It would be like doing deep fried Japanese food in Japan. Going, yeah, hey, you guys just, like this?
Yeah, we don't fucking eat.
No,
this.
What it would, be, I think, is trying to sell prawn crackers to the Chinese. You have prawn crackers here?
No.
Oh, no, it's big pink. Chinese food is so different in the other countries.
Than like, here?
Like, our Chinese food is very different to your Chinese food, and neither of them are anything like Chinese food.
They're not actually, it's not actually Chinese
Italian
food.
Italian food's the big one, because we got our Italians at different times. You guys got Italians like 100, 150 years ago, and that your Italian food has really become an American. Whereas we got Italians in the 70s, so yeah. They're still hanging on. So I went to, like, one of the first things I went to in Steubenville, it's where Dean Martin is from. So I went to their 100-year-old Italian restaurant with pictures of Dean. Dean would have been here.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, can I have a puttanesca? And they're like, what is that?
So they don't.
We got red sauce, white sauce.
So we've Americanized Italian food.
Very much so.
And so when you get it in Australia, you're getting actual from. So
you're getting, I think, something closer to the.
Is it getting.
But also like your American weird Italian food. We got a great. The spaghetti.
Noodles and tomato sauce.
Salad with one big chili filled with oil. Or whatever the hell's inside that.
That's so weird. You never think about that. Like
that was because
American
to me.
Culture is so like viral.
Yeah,
like you get it on it, and it like
bits
it's
of
like
it.
A virus. Like it takes it over, and it's like,
yeah.
Well, yeah, sure, this is Chinese, but this is American Chinese.
But you also like, only export some. It's weird being here, and the things people care about are very different to like the things that make it into the media that come out. Like college football being huge here.
Love it.
We watch the Super Bowl and that's it. And also the way a Super Bowl game looks is so different to every other.
Yeah.
It's two great teams who are really, really nervous.
Yeah.
Playing, you know.
Yeah.
It's often straight. I mean, years. That's what we thought NFL was just Tom Brady throwing 6 yards at a time.
That's so fucking funny.
But it's really a better game. I mean, college football is vibrant and exciting, and there's none of that. We get zero.
So you don't get any of like the fun part of what like college football or the NFL.
No.
Has we that also, been mind-blowing for you?
The other thing, we don't get the Super Bowl ads. So we could look them up online, but when we're watching the Super Bowl, we're getting, you know, like a guy selling a TV down the road.
He goes, hey, $147
is a good television set. Funeral insurance from your local neighborhood.
Matthew McConaughey dressed as Batman stuff. Being like, Robin loves Uber Eats. And you're like, why are you just freaking out? Salesforce, dude. I've been obsessed with that.
Yeah, I saw you talking about it.
Yeah, on Snobbies.
Yeah,
because I'm obsessed with celebrities that are backing AI.
This is one of the first conversations we had. Was it, you couldn't believe that people would do gambling commercials when they had all that money.
Yeah.
And I always think something must have gone very wrong for Anthony LaPaglia or whatever to be doing Bet365. Or,
yeah, dude, it's bad. It's really bleak because...
They don't need it. It's not a good thing. I enjoy a little punt occasionally. I don't mind a little pokey machine.
I love doing it.
Eurovision
way,
winner, whatever. I bet
when I'm in
that.
Vegas, I want to play blackjack. I want to go to a sports book. I want to put in a bet. Claiming a sports book ticket in person,
it sounds great.
Is so fun.
Oh,
so fun.
You don't do horse racing as much here. You have some horse racing.
We have some horse racing
in Australia. It's like you go into any bar and there are three screens playing the horse races going on at that time in the world.
And when you win, you have something to hand someone.
You get to hold it. When you lose, you get to tear it up. And
now with the
dog
axe.
Racing, you don't do dog racing. There's
we
some
do,
dog
we do
racing.
Greyhounds.
I saw in Empire Casino, I think Wheeling, West Virginia. I got to see the dog track.
I'll tell you what, if you had more time here, I would take you up to the Empire Casino. We go watch.
Do you go as far as the Jap? Now, what? There's like a couple hours where no one anywhere in the world is awake to do horse racing or dog racing.
Yeah,
and at that point. In Australia, you pop on the Japanese robot dogs where they have like 3D dog racing simulations.
Oh my god, that's too much.
We cannot stop. We cannot be stopped.
But my thing with the gambling ads is we haven't seen the epidemic hit yet.
Yeah. Well, I've seen it. Australia's the highest gambling losses per capita anywhere in the world.
Really?
We beat Asia. We beat Singapore's number two. We beat them like 2-1.
Do you guys have it on apps and stuff?
I'll get into a couple of things. So their advertising is incredible.
Okay.
And what they did, because there weren't a lot of good comedy jobs going in Australia,
sure,
is they took some of the best, like people who really could be big and may still be big one day, and should have been writing on a sketch show.
Sure.
And instead they're writing for these gambling commercials.
So they're like really well done.
Incredibly beautifully shot, better written than anything that's on television, gambling commercials.
That's
then, because like Men Are Lonely, social, like there's a social media component to our gambling apps where it's like you're betting with the boys, you're all in a group chat. That's where the chat's happening. That's where the online hangout is on the sports bet.
Yeah.
It's fucked.
They've weaponized the idea.
People about sport. Because everyone's doing a multi-bet. You know, you're not just watching the game hoping somebody wins. You got to hope they win in a very specific way where he gets 25 touches. And it's, you know, the leader of the opposition when I was there, he was like, I just miss watching football, watching a game of footy with my sons. Just having a normal conversation about football.
About caring. About the sport.
But instead of being like first goal scorer and they got to get to this or that, it's just like it's ruined gambling. Well, the fun of gambling.
There was something romantic when gambling was dangerous.
Yeah.
When it was like, you got to go to a bookie.
We had one day in Australia on Anzac Day, which is where we, Australian New Zealand Army Corps and celebration of the military. But it was the one guy, you could gamble in public and it was fine. And they do a game called Two Up, which is just two coins on a stick and you throw it in the air. You go heads, tails, or combo. But it's, because it was the only day you could do it.
Yeah.
Hundreds of people there with their money in the air going, heads! I want heads! Give me heads!
That's incredible.
That's a fun.
You guys did a gambling
dice game. I played a dice game in America on a bar with the bar staff. And everyone's, you know, laying their $10 down and throwing dice together and you count up the dice. And this is a thrill.
Oh,
this
you did so much nicer. You did CeeLo.
Yes, like I played
CeeLo. 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, you're out. 4, 5, 6, you win.
It was like, you want to get the sevens. You want to keep rolling with.
Oh, you're playing craps.
I have no idea. No, I think Simmons is out. I don't remember. Someone explained it to me.
CeeLo's the shit.
You want to get like 3-3. If you can get all the same one, then you trump everybody else by the end.
CeeLo, you want to do is you want to get 4, 5, 6 and you win.
Okay.
On three dice. And if you get 1, 2, 3, you're out. And then you do like different combos. It's very fun.
Basically, I got a 40 with my homies hanging outside the just drinking, liquor store.
Shooting dice, throwing it against the wall.
I know. So CeeLo Green has taken his name from that.
Yeah, CeeLo's from.
I hadn't thought about it. I didn't know that.
From the dice game. But you guys did it right because that day you're describing was like the purge. You basically did the purge with gambling.
Let's all get it out of the system. Let's have it. And then we got the pokey machines and we really ran with pokey machines.
Yeah.
And the old people with the pokey machines sitting there all day.
When you're driving through the United States next time, go into a gas station.
Go to a Sheetz in PA.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen it. I've done it. I had a great time. Then I was angry when I got to Ohio. And where are these? Where's the VIP lounge?
Dude, when we drive, she and I drive to Colorado every Christmas and back. And it's funny when you get into a state with those and you'll walk into piss and it'll be like, cling, 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 cling. And you walk in, you're like, oh, fuck, you guys just straight up are gambling in this gas station.
And I like the big vending machines with the scratchy cards.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't partaken of them, but
it's good to know that gambling is a worldwide problem.
I mean, it's just the advertising and the billboards and the push and like interrupting the game to tell you the odds and.
Oh, dude! Now they do it like you watch ESPN and it's just like, here's how you should gamble tonight.
What is fun? Here's on the AFL, the Australian Football League app, where they're trying to go woke at the same time.
Yeah.
So they've got the teams and the score, and then under that the gambling odds, and then under that the Aboriginal place name for the place that it's
so
at.
Fucking
that,
those funny.
Are the two innovations. Is the Crows are $1.79, and also this is being played at the Ghana Oval.
Yeah, but that's also so funny the where they go like, people. Hey everybody, give up your kids' college fund, and also
we're nice people. We're so sorry. We acknowledge.
I mean, dude.
We acknowledge the Kulin Nation as we get on a multi up here. That's the voice they use in the ads.
That's so funny.
Same game, multi. I hate
that big
also,
voice.
I would have done those ads if I was slightly more successful. If they said have $70,000 a year to write sports bet commercials, I would have said yes, please.
If I of course was still drinking,
yeah,
there would have been at least three times this podcast where I go, don't Don't forget, sign up at DraftKings.com because I would just be buying my hooch and getting drunk and being like, I don't give a fuck, give me money.
California sober is a term that I heard recently. I haven't heard that before, yeah.
Yeah, I get high. I get high on weed, but I don't drink alcohol.
I have...
Alcoholic? I'm an alcoholic.
I gotta get off nicotine. I'm a big nicotine.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, trust me, brother, I'm almost back. Yeah. America gets in any scraps overseas, me and the lady are buying a carton of cigarettes and ripping through
them. Wait until the war is on your soil. One day it'll come here.
It will up soon. Secretary of Defense? You see who our Homeland Security is?
You've got to keep that on a tighter leash. The cognitive dissonance of how you work with illegal immigrants in this country is nuts.
It's crazy.
Because they're everywhere.
Everywhere.
And they're in the public schools.
Yeah.
And there are ways for people to get a driver's license and presumably pay taxes. Are illegal immigrants paying taxes?
I think in a way, I'm too dumb for this. I don't have
certainly
the answers.
Certainly like sales taxes. And
they have to pay sales taxes. They have to pay income tax.
But it seems so easy to just come in and hang out. Was easier before. But like in terms of the numbers, it's very large.
Well, it's crazy.
But as a white collar person, if you come in the front door, this is the hardest place in the world to legally immigrate.
Oh, for sure.
If you want to fix the illegal immigration thing still want all these, just make it a bit easier to come into the...
It's so funny when you hear an Australian say that. Because if I were to say that, which I completely agree with, so many people would have opinions about it. Where you go, I just feel like we should make this system a little more comprehensive and a little easier to...
Trump used to run on this. He would say, we'll have a wall with a big, beautiful door. Yeah. And you got neither the door nor the wall.
Well, you know, what's funny is Obama... no one talks about it. Obama deported more people than Trump.
Yeah.
Obama was like, but he was doing that thing where, this is the thing that I hate about the Democrats.
He was going, relax, baby.
Yeah, where he's going like, I'm not doing anything evil. We're sending him back. No, we're just going to send him on a little trip home. And you go, I think that's pretty fucked up what you did. He's like, I didn't send him back. Obama's fucking, he's a wild boy.
With the drone strikes?
Oh, Yemen? Like, we fucking
I'm going to drone strike the Jonas Brothers house if they come for my daughter.
He wouldn't even fucking, he wouldn't even admit it. They'd be like, what are you doing in Yemen? He'd be like, oh, I gotta go. And they'd be like, you blew up a wedding in Yemen.
This is only Nixon can go to China is the expression, I think.
Yeah, that's very funny.
You gotta be, lefties can do right-wing things and right-wing people can do lefty things, but not.
No.
You can't do your own thing.
You can't do your own thing or else you get fucking zapped.
Whereas Trump now can raise taxes on the rich and everyone will go, okay. That's probably
he ain't gonna. The rich are like, Donald.
He's announced, he's saying he's gonna do it.
Yeah, but they're going, Donald. And he's like, shh, just give me a second. He's going like this, shut the fuck up. Give me a fucking second.
He's got it. Man, NPR has, I don't know if you listen to NPR very much. They're changing.
Were they going right wing?
They're going, they're a little more centrist.
Well, you know
they're
what
having someone on from both sides now,
and I'm
freaking out about it.
They're starting to see that everyone went so left during the 8 years Obama was.
Why can't left wing people in this country acknowledge that they held the mainstream for a long time?
Because then they would also have to admit that we took land from Native Americans and that
it is a slippery slope.
We enslaved black people for 450 years while they built the infrastructure that this country is.
Yeah.
And we treated them as.
Never get back to the Native Americans do not have a.
I grew up in Colorado, so it's right in your face.
There's some of that there.
You grow up in Colorado, you go.
Do they take?
I don't think this was a Taco Bell 150 years
ago. Do they take the 50 cents when you try and do a hand of gambling in Colorado? Is that just an Oklahoma thing?
Yeah, I think that's an Oklahoma
thing. I stopped by the side of the road at a casino in Oklahoma, and the guy just kept taking 50 cents. I was like, where's that going? He said, that's a table fee.
Well, what they do is they give, that was our way.
That's reparation.
We like flipped it where we went like, all right, we'll give you casinos to the Native Americans. And they were like, can we have booze?
We're
like,
give them sports betting.
That would be sick.
Just extend it to sports betting as well. And then at least it's doing
something.
They'd be
like, hi, I'm Runs With Parlay. Welcome to DraftKings. Are you a white man that's taken our land? Well, don't forget the Brewers are playing the Braves tonight.
What is the over-under on our life expectancy at the moment?
Or they just do it where they go, the great eagle thinks that the Brewers are going to cover. And you go, I feel like I should take this bet.
Should make a little noise this way. Doing.
How you put in your bet? He goes, hi.
Such a
the
cool.
great and powerful snake has told me.
I don't know.
Has told me that the Colts are incapable.
This is Shaq in a headdress. That's what the commercial.
No, this is me. This is my Shaquille O'Neal. I'm Shaquille O'Neal.
How did Shaquille O'Neal become the face of corporate America? He's
saying yes to everything.
He says yes to the printers. I think he did an ad for like. A small car. He can't fit in that car. For some reason, the Hyundai.
Katie got sent a box of Shaq gummies.
I saw the Shaq gummies.
They're not bad.
This week.
They're not bad.
They're not marijuana gummies either. No. They're like gas station gummies.
No, they're the kind I enjoy. They're just like the little fucking snacky.
Little piece of sugar. But he also does, was it Macy's? And Shaq is all over Macy's. And then you walk out of Macy's and there's a big billboard for like if you want to break something into payments. That's also Shaq.
Shaq will be everywhere. He does
it's
the
like
general.
17 Shaqs. Pizza?
Yeah. Papa John's,
they
the
said
general
he was,
car insurance.
Kobe said he was lazy, but only with the free throw practice. So he's not lazy working on
funny.
The commercials.
That's so fucking funny.
That was his real calling. He's working overtime
you
for
go,
that.
You go, Kobe, he's not lazy at all. Shaq's like, is that a commercial? Can I do it? Can I do the commercial?
I'm working.
I can't do Shaq.
He goes,
at all.
I was wondering if I could do that commercial too. Shaq, you already have enough commercials. I want that commercial. Can I have that commercial?
Must
well?
Be hard for him to only be able to do one per industry.
Yeah.
He does Papa John's, but he wants to do Pizza Hut as well.
I want to do Domino's. I want to do Pizza Hut. I want to do Little Caesars. You can't do
it
all
of
them.
It ends up having the feeling of like that being your monarch because you just see him trying to help people
King Shaq?
All the time. King Shaq.
He buys people laptops and trucks.
And printers. Does he actually buy them?
He buys them, dude. I've seen videos. Don't talk about St. Shaq.
I would never have a word against Shaq. It would be nice if he left some commercials for somebody else.
God gave
else.
The word, and the word was Shaq. And the word
Once
was...
Once there's a church of Shaq, I'm off the Shaq train.
That's always he goes, do y'all believe in Jesus? They go, yeah. You want to see me dunk? Yeah. And then he slams. He goes, God sent us down, and it was a slammer-jammer. I'm way bored. Dude,
did he coin slammer-jammer?
No. He
did could have.
He did a rap album in the 90s.
I've heard the rap album.
And it's called What's Up, Doc? Can
not
We Rock?
Bad.
It's bad.
It's very it's bad. Sort of Craig Mack type.
But there's this moment where he goes, do y'all want me to pass? And they go, no. Y'all want me to shoot? No. Y'all want me to slam? And they're like, yeah. It's great. What's up, Doc? Can we rock? It's one of the best.
It's kind of a dig.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the owners
after
of Papa
the
John's.
After the racist
because Papa John said the N-word. Then they had to send him away. So then Shaq was like,
I bet there's a lot more saying the N-word at Papa John's HQ now.
Now with him running
before,
it?
Yeah.
He goes, I told them we can't do a Sprite pizza deal for $10. Why can't I want to give Sprite to everybody.
Sprite being a black drink,
so funny,
was news to
SNL
me when I
had
arrived.
A great sketch where they did.
I almost never hear it acknowledged, and I have some. I've met white people who don't know that it's a black drink in America.
Yeah,
so marketed to black people.
What's funny is like when the SNL did that sketch where it was like brought to you by Sprite. How did we become the black soda?
Tireless effort.
You know why? Back in the 90s. Grant Hill drinks Sprite. I remember that all the time. Grant Hill drinks. They just marketed it.
Here's a funny Dr. Pepper one. Because Dr. Pepper is a weird indie.
I love it.
Okay, but
you're in a Dr. Pepper house.
In some countries, it's a Coca-Cola beverage. And in other countries, it is a Pepsi-Cola beverage.
So it is a... It is.
Different countries have
the distribution
rights to Dr. Pepper.
Coca-Cola.
In America. But I think like in the UK and other... We'd have to look it up. But it's like... Weirdly divided, that Dr. Pepper is a shared intellectual property of both the Coca-Cola Corporation and PepsiCo.
I gotta send you this video so you can edit it in right now to this episode. There's a video of a black dude sleeping with his mouth open, and someone pours Dr. Pepper in it, and he goes, "Oh, that's that Dr. Pepper," and it makes me laugh.
Is that a commercial?
No, it's just a video online that I sent to Shane. That I'll find. It's just a black dude sleeping with his mouth open. He's like an old black dude. He's like. And someone takes Dr. Pepper and they pour it in his mouth. He goes, oh, that's that Dr. Pepper.
When Shane got the Bud Light commercial,
yeah.
I think my friend Amos came up with it, but I pitched it as what I wanted the ad to be, my idea for an ad. And I think someone should do it for an ad. They wouldn't do it, apparently. But you have a guy being waterboarded, but they're waterboarding him with Bud Light.
Shane wanted to do that because of your recommendation.
Okay, well, it was Amos I'll give the credit to originally. And he's like, more. Yeah. And they're going, we don't know what we're doing wrong.
I talked to him about that.
Really? I'm so excited it got to that point.
Yeah, no, like Shane was like, no, we were this funny like waterboarding thing. And I was like, oh, that would have been great.
Ah.
And he's like, yeah, but like we're not down with that. And Anheuser-Busch is like, dude, we can't fucking do that.
It was such a good commercial.
Goes, you go to Guatemala, you go to Gitmo for the illegal immigration. You stay for the Bud Light. Holiday.
Their stock price. They won't do it. Their stock price. They would be bad. That would. That's what.
Put them over.
No one will remember the trans thing after the waterboarding commercial. I like to think.
Yeah, that'd be fucking great. I just looked at how long we were going.
How long have we done?
Like way over an hour.
Oh.
We never go this long.
Well, I should. I've got to do a show. I should take a nap.
I fucking love talking
this
to you.
We really James do an McCann, hour, 20.
Hey America on YouTube. Watch everything this guy does.
The James Donald Forbes McCann Catamaran Plan. It's out now.
And your book.
I got books of poems.
Yeah.
Got a third one. A fourth one's coming out soon. I don't know what to call it.
Incredibly Man. Smart. Incredibly
no,
funny.
No, no. I'm just. I'm,
incredibly
I'm,
fun to hang out with.
Oh, that's the one that makes. That's the Fuji one that makes it look like. Film?
Like the 70s.
I had a friend bring that. My friend Sam Clark brought that out to,
this guy's the best.
To Mike's the UK. The best,
dude. He's got all the fucking cool shit.
He's got all the gear. I need a U. I'm struggling. Doing a podcast on your own, dude, is a terrible experience.
The only reason I have any kind of career right now is because of him. He's the whole reason I have any sort of...
Are you getting a percentage?
Yeah. He's getting a raise. He got a raise. Listen, I pay the guy well. I pay the guy fucking decent.
If right? you're buying those trousers, you're doing absolutely fine.
Yeah, he's got fucking cool jackets and shit. He's fine.
Is this your semi-pornographic jacket? Yeah, I just keep looking at that woman eating what I think is not really a sandwich.
Look at that gay guy biting that nipple. James McCann's the shit.
That is really biting the heck out of that nipple.
Put more of him in your life, like that nipple
Thank
in that guy's mouth.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
James McCann rules. And bye.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.